Well, good afternoon again. This is Jody Celine, and joining us in just a moment is Dr. Peter Neumann. And Dr. Neumann is a principal scientist at SRI International, once part of Stanford University. He holds a PhD from Harvard and is the author of the book Computer-Related Risks. He also edits the Computer Risks column for ACM Software Engineering, and he's been working in the field of computers for over 50 years. Welcome, Dr. Neumann.
Thank you very much,
Jody. Oh, let me bring your voice up just a bit. Let's try that again. Welcome. Thank you for being with us.
It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you.
Okay. Well, I want to start by reading some of the headlines that have been a little alarming for voters throughout the last, say, 8 years of using electronic voting machines. In 2004, during the presidential elections, of course, Florida was a hotbed of problems, including one county where Al Gore's votes dropped by 16,000 votes. The voting machines actually showed 16,000 votes negative for Al Gore.
Yeah. And,
I'm sorry. Can you
say that was Volusia County in Florida, where the machine registered a count of minus 16,022 votes.
That's right.
For Al Gore.
Yes, and a few years later, things hadn't improved all that much. There was a county in Iowa, Boone County, where the vote counting equipment showed more than 140,000 votes, but the county only had 50,000 residents. Less than half of them actually were eligible to vote. The stories go on and on. And here we are now in 2008, getting ready for a big election. So my question, and I'm sure a lot of people's question, is have the machines improved? Can we trust the electronic voting machines?
Well, the first thing to realize, it's not just the machines. It's the entire process, going from registration to authenticating voters who show up at the polls, to vote counting, to vote recounting when something goes wrong. We've had several cases even in the last few months where results have been flipped when they did a recount. There was a vote in Palm Beach County where they lost 2,500 votes. They did a recount. They found 139 paper ballots and 110 electronic votes that they'd never counted before in Delray Beach. And you begin to wonder, well, the key problem there is that in the all-electronic voting machines, there is no audit trail. There's no way of assuring that the votes were, in fact, correctly recorded in the first place. It's worse than that because the standards against which these machines are evaluated are voluntary standards. The software, for the most part, for the all-electronic machines is proprietary. Nobody can look at it, usually. The evaluations are proprietary. They're paid for by the vendors. The internals of the computer machines are actually proprietary as well. There have been elections where a court order was given, and this happened to Rebecca Mercury in Florida some years ago, where she had a court order to go and look at the insides of the machine, and the vendor company said, "I'm sorry, our contract with the state says that we don't ever have to show any of the internals of the system."
Right, and actually wasn't Edward Felton, Princeton University teacher, warned to stop getting into Diebold's machines because his graduate students described how they opened up a voting machine in about 10 minutes and were able to completely change the vote without any sign of having tampering with it.
Yeah, Ed Felton is a very, very respected professor at Princeton. I've worked with a whole bunch of his graduate students. And I've worked with Ed myself, and he's a marvelous guy. So his intent has always been benevolent. He has taken contracts with Microsoft and Sun and various other places, and they've actually examined software before it was released. There was one Friday afternoon where Ed Felton's team discovered a fundamental flaw in the Microsoft software. They reported it to Microsoft on Friday afternoon, and Microsoft actually had a patch for that in the release that came out Monday morning. So on the whole, I think it is benevolent when the so-called the white hat hackers, the good guys, are able to look at some of the software, and the fact that all of the major vendors insist that nobody can look at it because it would decrease the security of their systems, which are, by the way, fundamentally flawed, as was demonstrated by the California Secretary of State, Deborah Bowen's top-to-bottom review from last summer. The systems are fundamentally flawed, and they're extremely badly implemented. If you look at the standards for gambling machines in Nevada and elsewhere, those standards are extremely high, and the standards for the voting machines are almost non-existent by comparison.
That's right. A University of Pennsylvania professor said that it's easier to rig an electronic voting machine than a Las Vegas slot machine.
It's much harder to rig the slot machines.
Well, I guess we could have confidence if we want to gamble, but if we want to vote and have our vote counted,
then you're gambling.
Then we're gambling. So you brought up Secretary of State Bowen's top-to-bottom review. That was on the Hart Intercivic voting system.
There were three systems that actually participated in, or three vendors that actually participated in that study, Sequoia, Diebold, and Hart Intercivic. They actually asked ES&S, which is a fourth company, to participate. ES&S said, "I'm sorry, we're not going to let anybody look at our systems because it would decrease the security of those systems." And Secretary of State Bowen immediately decertified all of the ES&S systems that would have been used in the 2008 election as a result of that. I think she's a tremendous hero in my eyes, that she has been one of the real leaders in government, of people who really understood the difficulties that we have here in terms of how really bad the systems are. And if you look at the results of the top-to-bottom review, Hart Intercivic, Diebold, and Sequoia, as I mentioned, there were three reports on each of those systems. So there were nine reports that related to how deeply flawed some of those systems are. And there was a tenth report on whether these systems were, in fact, useful for handicapped voters, blind, deaf, and so on. And the conclusion of that 10th report was that even those systems that are being used only for the disabled are not very helpful there either. So I think the results of that summer study from last summer, which involved maybe 30 or 40 professors and graduate students, were really the first time that anybody had in any detailed way looked at some of these problems. I actually had looked at some for the city of New York over a decade and a half ago, and concluded that there were many ways in which in a system could a computer-based election could be wrong undetectably, either accidentally or intentionally, and that there were very serious problems then. This is a problem that you sort of started out by mentioning the difficulties in 2004 and 2008. This goes way back into 1982. There were a bunch of computers that failed in Indiana during an election, actually failed during the counting process, and they were patched by the vendor during the counting process. There were a whole bunch of suspected fraud cases in 1984. In 1988 in Florida, there was an election in which 210,000 votes disappeared in the Senate race in the four punch card counties, which looks as if it was tampering, but it's very hard to prove because there's no evidence anymore. And it goes on. It goes on through 2000 and 2002. One of my favorite stories is the Jeb Bush election in his governor's race, where there were hundreds of people who pressed the button for his opponent, and the screen came up and said, "Oh, you just voted for Jeb Bush. Thank you." And I guess in some places they actually called in the vendor's representative, and he said, "Oh, it's just an error on the screen, but it's correct in the memory."
And yet there's no way of telling if that's true, because these are not machines that give a verified paper trail.
That is correct.
I know in Florida also, during the last presidential election, voters said they intended to select John Kerry, but the computer asked them to verify the choice, and it showed them instead having voted for President Bush.
Yeah, this is true.
Seems like Florida has had more than its share of computer problems.
Yeah, there was the Sarasota case in 2006 where there were 18,000 votes that disappeared. There were the cases that you mentioned already. There was one in Sarasota, basically, where 10,000 votes disappeared in 2008. And the real question is, have we learned anything from this long litany? I said I started back in the 80s, in the mid-80s, working on this problem. And the question is, have we learned anything over the years? And I think the answer is we haven't learned enough. Going back to the 1988 Florida race, where there was a 14% drop-off in the Senate race in the four punch card counties, the losing party should have realized that something was fundamentally wrong, and apparently they didn't. They assumed it was a legitimate accident that had resulted in 210,000 votes disappearing. That would have reversed the results of the election, because that was a heavily Democratic county, or a bunch of counties, actually, four counties, and the election was very close. So a 14% loss of votes in the Senate race for those four counties was quite telling. And so I think the conclusion here is that we have seen over the years some efforts made. For example, the 1990 voluntary standards were replaced by the 2002 voluntary standards, which are now being considered in the 2007 standards. And these standards are so weak, you can drive entire trucks through them without any difficulty whatsoever. And as I said, they're voluntary, and the evaluations are proprietary, so nobody really knows. Until somebody like Ed Felton comes along, or some of the teams. Felton was, in fact, on one of the teams, or he was actually not on one of the teams, but his students were, on one of the Secretary of State's summer study evaluations.
It seems almost like a graduate exam project to break into voting machines. It's been done now by students a fair amount. And, you know, these are machines that the U.S. has spent several billion dollars providing for people to vote, in part because of the Help America Vote Act in 2002, which is essentially a very good thing to help handicapped people access voting systems. But what went wrong? I mean, where all of this money has been spent, all of these new machines were brought in, they were tested first, one would think.
Sort of.
Sort of.
I mean, the testing process is inherently incomplete.
Mm-hmm.
The problem there was that as a result of the 2000 election, people discredited punched cards. It wasn't the punched cards' fault so much. There were voting machines, manual voting machines, where you tried to push a needle through a card, and there were, in fact, some of the machines where you could not stick the needle through the card because the backing of it was jammed up with chad from previous elections that had never been cleaned. And there were a whole bunch of other things that went wrong there, too. But as a result of that, punch cards were discredited, and the HAVA Act made it appear that if you rushed into getting a whole bunch of electronic machines, which it turned out had no audit trails and no accountability, that would solve the problem. So I think the problem here is that we tend to always look for simplistic solutions. And if you think about the voting process from beginning to end, counting the registration and the authentication of voters and the disenfranchisement of people who are on a list of purported convicted felons who aren't in fact convicted felons, and you look at all of the problems that result when the election is very close and there's some evidence that there might have been rigging or accidents or whatever, but there's no way of doing a recount without actually running a new election. All of this becomes extremely questionable. And so I think we have gotten ourselves into a very strange state where some people, Rebecca Mercury again is one example of who is promoting in her doctoral thesis the idea of the voter verified paper trail. If that were properly implemented, that would in fact detect the fact that the machines were not doing the right thing. On the other hand, the paper presents additional problems, and if the vendors really don't want to make the thing work, it's not going to work. So they seem to be quite happy with systems that are fundamentally flawed, and the voters are left wondering whether there is, in fact, any integrity in this process. Now, are you going to get your registrar, county registrar, on today, or is he not going to be around?
He will be joining us a little bit later in the hour. He'll be here at about 1:45. I just want to let people know, if you're tuning in right now, we're talking to Dr. Peter Neumann, and he is a computer security expert. You mentioned Rebecca Mercury, and she was not able to join us, although I have spoken with her a few years ago. So she talks about voter verified rather than voter verifiable. Can you explain the difference?
Well, verifiable would merely mean that the voter has an opportunity to verify that the vote was correctly recorded. Voter verified means that the voter actually did verify that the vote was correctly recorded. And the idea of this paper trail, which is an extra, which is an addition really to the all electronic machines, is that if the voter is required to verify that what's on the piece of paper is in fact consistent with what's on the screen, that would be an example of voter verified. If the paper trail is there, but it's optional whether the voter actually uses it or not, that would be voter verifiable if they wanted to. And the problem there is that if the machine is able to determine whether they verified it or not, it could change the vote.
So which one do we get when we're using an ATM to take money out of the bank?
Now,
we get a little slip of paper.
ATMs are completely different because, first of all, you've got the notion that the there's a camera on the ATM. You've got the notion that there is a record made, which you're getting actual receipt of your transaction. There's a transaction number on it, typically. And the bank records are using a programming style which never loses, supposedly, never loses a transaction. Now, we just had a case in the last few days where some people in Indiana, I believe, figured out, they looked in the manuals and they discovered that there's a default password for the ATM. And they were able to break the ATM. There's earlier cases where the same thing happened in gasoline pumps, where you could change the, you could essentially double the amount of gas that you were getting for the same price. The ATM scam is basically that the same password has been used in every ATM that's used by a particular vendor. And knowledge of that password means you can change the parameters of the system so that you can, for example, make the machine believe that it's giving out $1 bills instead of $20 bills. So you're basically getting 20 times as much money. And there was actually a felony charge a couple of days ago for a couple of people who had discovered how to do that. Now, this is very easy to do. And the idea that the ATM is more secure than the voting machine is true because there is an audit trail, because there is a camera on the ATM, because there is a printed record of what your actual transaction was. In the voting machine, there's no printed record of what you actually voted, because if you did, you could, if you had one, you could go and sell your vote, which is a bad thing. And there is no audit trail inside the computer system that would determine unequivocally how you had voted, unless there's an external paper trail. But we've had cases where the paper trail was different from what was on the screen, as in the case of the Jeb Bush election, where the results on the screen were not what you had just voted for. If that should occur, then you would like to believe that the election commissioner would say, "Well, we're going to trust the paper rather than the electronics, because the paper is something that the voter has actually claimed is correct." If, in fact, they have verified their vote. On the other hand, when the paper disagrees from the electronics, there have been cases where the election officials said, "Well, we trust the computers, we don't trust the paper, so we're going to go with the electronic vote," even when the paper was right and the electronic vote was wrong. So I think we have... If we hold the computer systems that are used in elections to the standard of say, the gambling machines, we would have elections that are probably not going to have all of the problems that we've been seeing. And you've only touched on the tip of the iceberg here. I have on my website, you'll find probably a couple of hundred cases of elections that were disputed because something evidently went wrong. There was one case where there were, I think, 2,600 more votes than the actual number of people who had voted. And the vendor was called in. They said, "Oh, yeah, we forgot to zero out the test run. And we'll change the software so that doesn't happen again." You mentioned the Boone County, Indiana case where the machine registered 144,000 votes, where there were only 19,000 voters. And it turns out that only 5,352 of them had actually voted.
That's a big difference.
That's a big difference. You're right. And so, you know, in that case, it's obvious that something is wrong.
Well, in those cases, it's obvious, but there are other cases that potentially could be very malicious. In another Florida case, CNN reported that Leon County's supervisor of elections was testing their machines, and they had an expert there who actually programmed the voting machine on a laptop in his hotel room, and there wasn't any kind of trail. You couldn't figure out that it had been changed.
I see you've done your homework very nicely here. This is marvelous that you're as so aware of what's really been going on. And it turns out that it is relatively easy to do that. The Diebold systems, for example, are sitting on top of a Windows operating system, the password to which is well known. Typically, it's the default password that's never been changed, as was the case with the ATMs and as is the case in some of the other situations. The access to the operating system that's sitting underneath the voting system means that you can do absolutely anything to the voting system. Now, there's also cases in which the vendors actually had telephone lines into the voting systems during the election. And the reason for that was so they could fix problems if something went wrong. And I think fix may be the operative word there. any change to a certified system is suspect. Now, if you look back on one of the elections in California a few years back, Diebold, as I recall, had 17 counties in which their systems were being used. And in every one of those 17 counties, the software that was being used in the election was not the certified software. They had subsequently changed it.
After the machine was certified, they substituted it with something else.
That's right.
Okay.
And when you have any situation like that, where there are any changes, then all bets are off. Now, the problem is that when you're finding flaws up until the days before the election, it would be desirable that they could be fixed. But any time you make one of these changes, technically speaking, you're supposed to go back and recertify the system rather than just patch it. But when you've got the ability to patch things on the fly as the election is proceeding, it is particularly suspicious, I think.
Dr. Nauman, we're joined now by Gregory Diaz, our local Registrar of Voters. Thank you, Mr. Diaz, for coming in.
My pleasure.
I am delighted to meet you, even though it's telephonically.
Dr. Nauman, been very interesting the last 45 minutes. Thank you.
Oh, you've been on all this time?
Of course.
Wonderful. Good. I'm glad. I thought you could only join us at the end.
I only get to speak now, but I've been listening.
Good.
Thank you for your insights.
How does that jibe with your own experience? I've spoken with a lot of election officials over the years, and I think there are some who believe that I am an airhead academic who doesn't understand elections, even though I've been working in this area for over 50 years and working on election software for over 20 years. And there are others who such as Deborah Bowen, actually, for whom I testified twice when she was still a state senator, who really understood what the issues were and who were very concerned. So how does the situation that we've described thus far jibe with your own experience?
I'd like to maybe describe my policy and describe why I'm here, what the elections official should do. Number one, that's to make sure the public has confidence in the office. In order for the public to have confidence in the office, it's my obligation to listen to the Dr. Newmans, comply with Secretary of State Bowen, who I thought did a very good job. Top to bottom review was just fine. I thought we corrected a lot of mistakes in the machines, and procedure was addressed and corrected for the most part. So I was glad to see that. I'm under the obligation to collect feedback, evaluate feedback, be transparent, and that equates, hopefully, into confidence into our procedure and into the office. The one thing I do is manage and conduct an election. To manage an election, I need to pay attention to the people, to the procedures, and to the technology. Make sure they integrate, make sure we're on the same page, make sure we're working together so we can have a successful election day, obviously a successful canvass after the election. So I don't know if that gives you some insight as to where I'm at, but I welcome all views of thought. I'm ready to evaluate all views of thought, and I think it only helps. I think it only helps. The key really is to communicate to the constituents, be transparent, and manage an election. That's really what you have to do.
Can you describe a little bit the voting systems that you're actually using for insight voting and absentee?
Well, we're using the HART voting system. Absentee ballots are mailed out. We're close to 60% in the county. We have a central scanner. So we accept the envelopes back. They need to be signed by the voter. We've invested in technology called Vote Remote, which is signature verification. We can run these envelopes through the Vote Remote, and then we can open up the envelopes, extract the ballots, and we'll count the ballots. So at 8 p.m. when the polls close, we should be able to release a tally of almost 100% of the absentee ballots.
Uh-huh. For your listeners, the Heart Inner Civic is a direct recording machine, but it's not a touch screen. It has a little rotary.
It's not a touch screen. That's correct. And this is the electronic machine.
Yeah.
We also employ the e-scan, which is an in-precinct scanner.
Right.
Yeah. And we did engage the services of Freed, which is a group around here addressing the needs of the disabled community, and this is the system they preferred when the county was deciding which system to go with.
Yeah.
So in 2007, Deborah Bowen certified the Heart machine and then decertified it,
mm-hmm.
and then said provisionally with changes she would allow it. What were those changes?
Boy, I don't have my list here, and they're very technical. Dr. Newman, you probably know a
lot
more.
Well, just top of the head. Don't try to get into the technical details. I think that's probably...
I think one of the big changes is making sure we scrub the system clean before we go into any election. A tally database, ballot now when we're creating the ballots. We need to make sure everything's been removed. The system has been hardened. I think that's the term they use.
Yeah.
And then we jump into a new election. For me, a lot of the chain of custody procedures were very important. How we distribute the machines, how we take out the memory cards, how those are transported back to the central office. The chain of custody procedures, I think, are quite important to prevent any kind of tampering, to prevent unauthorized access to the machines, et cetera, et cetera. So my office was, we really had to sit back, understand what the procedures were, and then deploy accordingly, which was different than past elections.
So if people in this county wish to vote on a paper ballot, do they have that option?
Absolutely.
They just need to ask.
Yeah, and I'm a big vote-by-mail person, so folks can always sign up to vote by mail, and they get a paper ballot. They can also come to the polling places, and there's an option to vote on the electronic machine or to ask for a paper ballot, and then the voter will scan their own paper ballot into the in-precinct scanner.
Now, also relevant here, since I said earlier this is sort of an end-to-end integrity problem from the very beginning to the very end, you have to be able to deal with provisional ballots for people who might be questionable. You have to deal with various other anomalies that might arise during the election. And I presume that that you're able to... have enough provisional ballots if necessary. How do you actually handle those?
Well, first of all, my feeling is if anyone shows up, we're going to ask them to vote. I want to make sure people do vote. If we have any questions at all, the poll worker will issue a provisional ballot. The provisional ballots will come back to the office, and then we can check signatures. We can make sure this person has not voted previously, either with a vote-by-mail ballot or a polling place ballot. And then we will either count that provisional ballot or we won't. We also have a feature on our website. If someone does vote provisionally, they can call the office and we'll tell them whether that ballot counted or not. So I know a lot of voters were quite anxious after receiving the provisional ballot, but we've set up a mechanism to give them an answer.
This is wonderful. I think if I compare what you're doing with Florida and Ohio and various other places, it sounds as if you've really got your act together in a very beautiful way.
You know, I think it's really a liquid process, Doctor. Procedures come, elections are different, turnouts are different, ballots are different, shapes and sizes. It's really our charge to make sure machines are reset correctly, make sure the proper memory cards are inserted, make sure chain of custody regulations are followed, make sure machines are up and running 7 a.m. election day, make sure the procedures for collecting the memory cards are correct. And right now, America, they want speedy results.
Yeah.
So we have paid attention to that, and we try to get the results out by 10, certainly before 11.
Yeah, well, you've just reminded me of how complex this whole process is. I was very amused. I was on Dr. Mercury's PhD committee,
mm-hmm.
and one of the professors in that committee said, I don't understand why there's a problem here. I can add up a bunch of numbers and get it right. And it's so much more than that when you put together all of the procedures you've got to go through. The average age of poll workers is reportedly 72. You've got a tremendous training problem to make sure that everybody knows what they're doing. And in some cases, the last-minute adjustments to those procedures are still being worked out. And the poll workers really have a heck of a time trying to keep track of it all. So I think this is in fact a remarkably complicated process, and it really deserves all of the transparency and oversight and accountability that it can get.
One of the keys is the poll workers. I'm glad you mentioned that. We do require right now 4 hours of training, 2 hours of procedural training, 2 hours of equipment training. At the same time, I am talking to the powers that be in the county to get these folks a little bit more money, since we are requiring them to come a couple times before Election Day.
Yeah.
As you know, Election Day, many, many hours. I think the training is crucial. We have developed visual aids for the poll workers. I think some very nice books. You don't want this to be too complicated. I don't want someone to open up a book and see a whole lot of black after 14 hours in the polling place. Put some color in there. Let's increase the font size. Let's put photos in and visuals in. Because they're really the key out in the field on Election Day. Procedures are so important to me. They need to be followed. We do have field election deputies that go around to all the precincts continually. And in that way, as the poll workers get more trained, as the feds become better trained, I think that lends toward a smooth process and toward having a speedy results.
Let me ask you a question, if I may. If you compare the procedures that you have to train your poll workers on for the paper ballots versus the Hart InterCivic machines, are the electronic machines just much more complicated in terms of what they have to learn, or is it pretty much the same?
I think that's an interesting question. I do believe there's a digital divide in our population. For some, they're much more complicated. For another sector of the population, they're much easier. A guy like me, I'm in my mid-50s. I do know how to work a computer. I've been down that road. I think they're much easier. I think the process for the poll workers on Election Day is much easier. I think historically, paper has been a problem. I mean, you go back 200 years ago when we only had paper, there were immense problems out there. From people getting beat up, to paper being stolen, to paper and votes being reproduced. It was up until the 1870s when they created what they call the lever machine.
Yeah, right.
So people can come in, because paper was getting to be too dangerous.
And New York,
it was just too unreliable.
New York is still using those.
That's correct. That's correct. And we mentioned Florida in the year 2000. Pull away all the blankets. It was paper.
Yep.
It was paper. That was the problem.
Yep.
So with the Hart InterCivic machine, is there anything that the voters take away with them that shows on paper what they what their vote was?
Well, we're talking the electronic machine. There's a VVPAT, voter verified audit trail, paper audit trail. They can't take that away with them. We actually keep that. But they're, I think they're instructed to review it three times before they're asked to cast a ballot.
Okay.
So the voter has ample opportunity to review what was voted on.
And that is, again, that was something that Rebecca Mercury in her doctoral thesis went through in great detail of what it took to make that work.
Yeah.
This is something that takes an electronic machine that it typically does not have an audit trail, does not have the ability to do a meaningful recount, because if the bits are wrong already, they're incontrovertibly wrong.
Mm-hmm.
It does allow the voter to verify that what's on the paper is in fact correct. Now, in cases of disputes, do you actually count the paper rather than the bits?
We do.
And that is the essence of the whole thing.
Yes. Yes. And there's also another redundancy. That's the hard drive within the computer.
Yeah.
So, and especially for the scanners.
Yeah.
We'll have a memory card, a hard drive, and ballots.
Right.
There's
now,
triple redundancy.
The problem with the triple redundancy, and I both Rebecca and I testified for the Houston City Council on that particular subject of the hard InterCivic.
Mm-hmm.
The election commissioner kept saying, look, there are three different versions of the same vote. And if they don't agree, then something's wrong. But they always agree. Well, they always agree because even if the first one is wrong, they're all copies of the first one. So the fact that there are three supposedly independent versions is fallacious. They're all copies of the same vote image, which could be wrong.
So what's your solution? What's your suggestion?
Well, the whole point of the VVPAT, the Voter Verified Paper Audit Trail, is that even if those three are all wrong, consistently but all wrong because they were all entered from the screen, from what's on the screen that went into the memory, if it was different, but all three of them were still the same, the paper trail would show that the voter's intent was not what's on the paper.
Mm-hmm.
So that is, in a sense, a rescue mission for the Hart InterCivic and for some of the other vendors who have in fact installed the paper trails,
mm-hmm.
that even if the machine is wrong, it will show up, and the first thing that has to happen is the election officials have to say, oh, there is a problem with the machine. We just take it out of service and don't use it anymore.
Mm-hmm.
See, that is the beauty of the paper trail. Now, the paper trail also has problems with the paper jams and there are other things as well. But I think the whole purpose of the paper trail was to salvage something. If you're spending $3,000 on a machine that doesn't have an audit trail and has no accountability, adding the paper trail to it at least gives the voter the chance. And this is the difference between the voter verified and the voter verifiable. It gives the voter a chance to actually verify that what is on the paper is in fact the intent of the voter.
And this is what Nevada County purchased. It's interesting because Hart does have two versions of their electronic machine.
Yeah.
One with and one without.
Right.
Which I don't understand, but...
Now, was the second version of the Hart machine modified after some of the problems that were found? Do you know?
I don't think so, and I'm not an expert on Hart and how these machines have evolved, but it's my understanding from the beginning they were working on a voter-verified paper audit trail. There may have been a time when the first electronic machines were dispensed and sold without them, but I think this was part of their planning from the get-go.
Jody, there is another issue, and that is that a lot of the evaluations are done not against the new standards, but the old standards.
I know.
And secondly, the vendors do not want to keep changing their software. So even though they recognize there are bugs in it, they often say, well, we can't make that change because we'd have to go back and recertify everything, and that is just too time-consuming.
While I have 1 minute, please, I'd like to thank the workers right now in the office, our permanent staff, the warehouse people. It takes a lot to conduct these elections, and I don't want them especially to get discouraged with our dialogue today. I'm here to try to pump people up, have confidence in our office. Every vote is going to count, and these folks who really conduct the election, they just do a great job.
Well, I think you're doing a great job, and I want to point out equally here that a lot of the problems that Jody had mentioned and that I've mentioned were, in fact, the result of not having the paper trail.
Yes, that's correct.
And that is one thing that I've been fighting for what, 15 years? Rebecca has been fighting for it for a long time.
Yeah.
Of having some real accountability in these systems.
Yeah, and I appreciate your efforts. Like I said when I first came on, you know, there's a lot of common sense involved here as well, I think. And it's essential.
Well,
to
VPAT. If you look on my website, just go to Peter G. Neumann, N-E-U-M-A-N-N.
Yeah, I was on it some this morning.
And you'll see a whole bunch of stuff on elections, but you'll also see that I've been working for over half a century on how do you develop really trustworthy computer systems.
Okay.
And this is in some sense a paradigmatic complex problem, because you have the privacy requirement and you have the integrity problems and everything else, security. This is a problem that really demands trustworthy systems.
Yes.
And if you look at today's operating systems and today's software development, it is not conducive to trustworthy systems. Mm-hmm. So we need not just to fix the voting system problem, we need to fix the systems that are being used in all of our critical infrastructures throughout the country.
I agree.
Well, this has been a great conversation that I know we could continue for many hours and bring in many other different voting machines and different issues, but I'm so happy that we had a chance to at least begin. We've been speaking with Dr. Peter Neumann and Gregory Diaz, the Nevada County Registrar of Voters, about security in voting machines and will your vote count. Dr. Neumann, any last words for our listeners?
Well, I'd just like to thank you for allowing us to get into some details here, because this is a very complex problem, and it's very hard for voters to understand what's really going on. So the challenge here is that we have a huge educational problem for the populace at large to get them to really appreciate what's going on, how difficult it is to get it right, and that the rush for instantaneous gratification of the media wanting to know the results before the election is over is inherently a bad thing. So it's better to get it right than to have to go through months and months of legal battles trying to figure out what really happened.
And would you give out your website again in case people want to follow?
Just go to Google or any browser and then look for Peter G. Neumann, N-E-U-M-A-N-N, and I'll come right up on top.
Great. Thank you very much. And any last words about Nevada County's vote coming up here for the presidential election in just over 6 weeks?
Yeah, well.
Under 6 weeks.
Jody, thanks for the opportunity to be here. Doctor, thank you for spending the hour educating folks.
It's been a pleasure.
People, procedures, technology, we're on top of it. We take this very seriously. We're going to be professional in terms of conducting an election. And the constituents of this county, by all means, have confidence in our office. And above all, vote.
Wonderful.
Great. Thank you so much.
Thank you both. This has been very delightful.
Thank you.